It's all of these moments that you, it's when you don't think and you don't overprocess that life tends to take you in the craziest and most amazing direction.
On this week's episode, I speak with Liam Heffernan, and we talk about his journey to finding the passion for podcasting and for audio. And what's so interesting about this story is kind of how he set it up at the beginning of how his life, he really sat in a lot of anxiety and did not do certain things because of that anxiety. And each of these little pivotal moments in his life, we kind of narrowed down to these moments where he just didn't think about it. It was late at night and he was interested in doing it and he just did it. And it led to these open doors and this new journey for him in audio and in podcasting and meeting his wife. And there's so many interesting stories in this conversation. So I was so honored to have Liam on the show. So I hope you enjoy this episode and feel inspired to take action when you're thinking about something and don't overthink it because it could lead to something super special. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to thank some people for making this show possible and being a part of the Patreon community for the Life Shift podcast. So thank you to Tracy and Mickey and Emily and Brian and Sari and Kathy and Rebecca and Stephanie and Jason and Marissa. You all are helping to support the show and help me produce better episodes and create bonus content and make more connections and continue to grow the show. So thank you for that. If you're interested in being a part of the Patreon community for the Life Shift podcast, just go to www.patreon.com/the Life Shift podcast. And without further ado, here's my conversation with Liam. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. I am here with Liam, and I think you're in another country.
Yes, if the accent doesn't give it away, I am all the way over in the UK.
Well, welcome to the Life Shift. We've been talking for a while to get you on the show, and our connection actually started on LinkedIn. And I guess I was just following you because you are in the podcasting space, and I saw you make a post saying, I want to essentially... It was like, I want to be more vulnerable. I want to get out there and just start sharing my story in front of the microphone, you know, like, or not in front, but I guess behind the microphone and kind of put yourself out there. So I was like, hey, come on over.
Yeah. And do you know what? It's such an isolating career working in podcasting. And often, you know, people think because it's podcasting, because it's broadcasting that anyone who works in podcasting is so comfortable and so good, you know, in front of the mic and you know, public speaking and all that jazz. And that's, you know, that's not the case. Most of us who work in podcasting are actually very quiet introverts that just like to sit in a dark room on our own all day and not talk to anyone.
I agree. And I think a lot of people don't really realize that, right? They think that they open their podcasting application and they play it and they're thinking it's just someone sitting in front of a microphone just talking to someone else. There's a lot of work that goes behind a podcast.
Oh, there's so much work. And you know, kudos to everyone that works in podcasting. You are unsung heroes for all of the hours of just sifting through ums and ahs. And no doubt, Matt, you're going to have a lot of that in this episode as well, which the listener obviously won't hear. But you know, I think as well, hosting a podcast, it's such a talent, and people don't realize that because generally podcast hosts make it look so easy, you know, and you as well, like the episodes of, you know, anyone that's listened to this podcast before, it probably sounds so seamless and just so natural. And that's mainly because you get some awesome guests on, but also because of all the work you do to make it sound like that.
I appreciated that. And for anyone listening, I didn't pay him to say that. So this is a really good a boost, an ego boost. But anyway, so I'm so glad that you came on today because I think that your story will resonate with a lot of people, or it will help people that are still searching, right? Because, you know, your story is really about falling into something or finding something that really just lit your fire and filled your cup and kind of changed your entire life by finding that. So before you kind of hint us in on that, can you give us a little bit of kind of like what your life was before you hit that life shift?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I guess I've always defined myself by the fact that I'm an introvert. I'm painfully shy, quite socially awkward and quite anxious. And that's really how I remember my childhood and all the years before, you know, this shift. And I remember being this kid who was too scared to get on a bus to school in the morning. So I would, you know, I was quite truant. You know, I missed a lot of school during sort of really important exam years because that anxiety just took hold and I was too shy. And I just, for no reason, besides the fact that I felt very insecure in myself, I couldn't get on a bus, you know, and just go that half an hour journey to school. And that, you know, that was quite a big deal. And it got to a point in my life, and I think it was when, you know, everyone around me had left secondary school or high school. You know, they were going off to university and college and doing their thing and kind of making their life for themselves. And I was sort of stuck at home in the same town, just kind of working at a bank that my mum got me a job at, because it was, you know, better than not having a job while I figured out what I wanted to do. And there was just, it got to a point where you kind of realize, okay, like something has to change, and you've got to, it reaches a sort of impasse where you've got to force that change. And even if you're not comfortable doing it, you've got to pivot and just go in another direction and see where life takes you. And that's really the purpose of, that's really what informs that big shift in my life.
Was there like a moment where it was like, this is enough, where you, because I mean, growing up, if you're, you know, so anxious to the point of not going to school and not doing the things that maybe everyone else around you is doing, not that you should have to do what everyone else around you is doing, I'll put that out there. But was there a point where you were working at this bank day in and day out doing, you know, just kind of going through life as it was there something that like triggered you to be like, okay, this is enough?
I think, you know, I love hearing about these big stories where people have these like huge epiphany moments and like suddenly life makes sense and they have this clarity and like, that's amazing for people that have that experience. But I really didn't. It's more of a cumulative effect. You know, you get stuck in this rut and before you know it, you know, a year has passed and you sort of have this moment where you take stock and think, you know, what is happening? And I think for me, where it really started to feel like something had to change was, you know, I didn't just get the job at a bank where my mum worked. She ended up being my supervisor for a period. So it's like, I just felt still like this little kid who got, you know, sort of handheld through life by his mum. And I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to be 40 and still like living with my parents and, you know, wondering what happens in my life. And I think that's when I realized that, you know, those changes had to be made. And in my case, you know, it was something quite unplanned. You know, I had a few days off of work, so I was sat at home. And I don't know how it works in America, but in the UK, there's results day when everyone who's finishing school gets their exam results. And it's at midnight on that day that there's this process called clearing. And the organization that manages all of the university applications and acceptances, they release a lot of like last minute places. So it's basically all the places on courses that couldn't be filled by universities through the normal application process kind of get put out there and you can just apply like last minute. And so I was off work. It was midnight. I was up and I thought, okay, let's just have a little look, see what's going on, see what kind of weird courses are out there. You know, I was looking for things like you know, golf course management, sort of really crazy stuff like that, just to amuse myself. And then I noticed the course that I applied to a year earlier, which was film and TV production in York, which is an amazing city. If you're ever in the UK, go to York. It's lovely. But this course was available and I got rejected from it a year earlier because I just didn't have the grades, you know. I was always playing catch up after, you know, being off so much. So I thought, okay, let's just chance it, apply through this clearing process. And within sort of 24 hours, I'd been accepted and I was getting ready to move kind of 300 miles away. And within a month, there I was in York starting uni, and it was all very sudden, very last minute, no real planning. And I guess that was the start.
That must have been an experience in itself.
Yeah.
Because the way you described yourself, like that's a lot of anxiety, like to pick up and move somewhere else to start something brand new.
Yeah, it's a big change, but I feel like this would apply to a lot of people out there who are quite anxious and overthink things, that I only did that because I didn't have a chance to process what I was doing. And I can say that about several moments in my life. I mean, fast forward like 5 years and I kind of booked a plane ticket on a whim and went backpacking around the US for 3 months. I wouldn't have done that if I'd have actually slept on it and thought about it the next morning. These things, I think sometimes you just have to kind of go with that spontaneous instinct, and it can change your life. And in my case, moving up to York was the start of that.
And you were going into radio and television, or was that more on the production side?
Yeah, so I was studying film and TV production. So I was always looking for things that I could do, you know, little work experience, odds and ends. And I was an introvert, but I like to keep myself busy. So I was sort of looking for things that I could do and places I could apply to, you know, start getting work. That's really what led to, I guess, the life shift moment for me. It's a funny one because a lot of the guests on your show, I'm quite jealous of, because they have these big moments and I'm like, that's amazing. They have these great lives and these huge like shifts, and like I'm quite envious of that. For me, it was more this incredibly innocuous thing, but I think it highlights the importance of that butterfly effect, and of just like, you know, you don't realize the tiny moments that end up defining who you are and what you do 10, 20 years down the line.
Yeah, this one, I mean, and you falling into it too, like had you not been up at midnight, right, at that moment in time, and then thought, oh, well, maybe I'll just look to see if there's some golf course management courses that I could take, or a program, or, you know, like, had you not even done that piece, right, the butterfly wouldn't have taken you to this moment in which you discovered, like, wow, this is the thing that I want to do forever.
Absolutely. And like, why stop there? We can go further back. You know, what was it that made me think, yeah, do you know what? That's the week that I'm going to have off work, even though I have no plans whatsoever. What compelled me that day to request that time off work? You know, what are the events that led up to that? You know, it's, you know, you can go back and back and back and back and get so carried away. But I think all of these huge moments, when you really like dive deep and trace it back, start from this like massively insignificant moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's similar to this journey into podcasting for me. It really stemmed from, I mean, if I kind of trickle it back, just being really bored during the pandemic and not in the way that other people have started a podcast, right? So I was bored, and I was always trying to find something to do. So I started doing digital art, and I created a bunch of coloring books. And I was like, well, that's not very fulfilling, because, you know, there's a million books on Amazon. So then I was like, well, I'm still bored. So I signed up for another graduate degree because I just needed something to do. And then, sure, I could take whatever classes they told me to, but I made a point to choose the classes that scared me the most. And so early 2022, I picked The Art of Podcasting. And we just had to do an assignment. And I was like, well, I'm just going to launch it, right? So it's like all these little things really stem from me just being bored. And now I'm having like the most fulfilling thing that I've ever done in my entire life. So I get that, you know, those little moments that like, what if I had taken a left?
Exactly. And I love the fact that this whole podcast sort of stemmed from a university project. And I also love that you were able to take The Art of Podcasting as a module. Like, do you know what? As a bit of a tangent, I'm so baffled, but kind of admire the US like college system, because you guys kind of pick a major and then just kind of, you can do whatever you want, like over them 3 years. like the UK is so much more rigid. Like you pick a course and that's it. That's what you study for 3 years. Like you go there to do whatever, and you can go off and do like the art of podcasting as like a side thing. Like that's amazing to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's good and bad to it, right? I mean, we have typical university age. You're going at 18. What do you really know? What do you really know about what you want to do, except for what you've seen your family members do or the people that you idolize do? And then you get in and then you sign up for a degree program in hospitality management. And you're like, I don't want to do this. Right. And so, yeah, we do have these choices, but sometimes it takes us in, like we have, 20 different classes that don't relate to anything. So when we get out, we're kind of screwed as well. So there's a good and bad to it.
Yeah, I guess. But I love that, though. I love that you have that choice up to like that late in life, because like over here, like even by 16, once you do that first set of exams, you then have to narrow your academic studies to like 4 courses. And some people pick like, maths, English, chemistry, whatever. Other people might pick, business, media. But you're narrowing already at 16, when I really don't know if we're like self-aware enough at that age to know exactly what path we want to go on. I don't know if we should be narrowing our academic options down to just like 4 subjects.
Yeah. And I can imagine like someone like you described your childhood, there's a lot of anxiety in that, because I think, having had anxiety throughout my life and always thinking, what if, or what if this happens, And so I'm imagining at 16, they're like, okay, pick what you want to do for the rest of your life. Good luck. I would be like, well, what if I did this and then this happened and then this happened? So you're right. That's really challenging. And we do have the freedom here to kind of choose and change. I think I changed my major, my bachelor's degree, like 4, 5, 6 times.
Wow. 'Cause
you don't know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But then you also waste a lot of money doing a lot of classes.
Yeah, I mean, we do have the luxury of not having tuition fees as high as you do.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, we have some good options. I will say, when I was going to school 20 years ago, it was free for me, because I was the student that did as well as they could on everything to get the free ride. So thankful for that. This one I paid for, but I'm older now. I can do that. That's fine. But we'll go back to your story, because I want to hear like how you fell into what fills your cup, like what really just drives you every day and kind of has changed your life, right?
Yeah. So I guess this feeds into what that sort of life shift moment for me was, because, as a kid, very anxious, very kind of unsure of myself, really lacking in confidence. And moving to uni was the first step for me to, and this is going to sound very kind of emo, very teenage angst, but I didn't know who I was, and I think going to university was as much a process of me kind of figuring out what I want to do as it was, trying to get a job. First year of that, I was terrified. Every day I'd go back to my bedroom and I'd just be kind of sat there like, what am I doing? Like, I don't belong here. Everyone else is like making friends and building these big support networks, and here I am like going back to my room on my own every night, and I felt so out of place. And I'm sure that I'm not an exception. I'm sure so many people who make this big change, at 18 and move away from home and start this life at college or university or wherever, have that moment. And, I guess partly it's imposter syndrome. You're there and you're studying and you're suddenly given this independence, academically and financially, to kind of manage your own life. And you just think like, whoa, like I can't handle this. I am not meant to deal with this right now. So it's a huge learning curve. And there were times when I definitely felt like I'm not meant to be here and I'm going to go home. And I came very, very close to just packing up and coming home during my first semester. What really changed for me was a pretty innocuous email that I sent to one of the faculty members. he worked in radio. He was sort of quite active in the media, and he's one of these more of a part-time lecturer. He'd come in and do some practical sessions with us. So I dropped him an email, and I said Roy Player was his name. And if he ever listens to this, or someone who knows him ever listens to this, then Roy needs to know that this guy has basically changed my life, and he doesn't even realize it. I sent him an email, and I just said, you know, have you got any suggestions? I want to do something. I want to just try and get some work or keep myself busy or something. And he emailed back and said, I know a couple of guys who run the local hospital radio station. Why don't you get in touch with them and see what you can do? And I don't know if hospital radio is a thing in the US or anywhere else in the world, but they're essentially not-for-profit, volunteer-driven radio stations that broadcast to a very small area. In this case, it was to the local hospital. So it was very local, very, very good cause. You know, a lot of volunteers would go there, not because they wanted careers in radio, but because they just wanted to do something good for their local community. So hospital radio is an amazing thing to do. You know, people, you know, go around the wards every evening collecting requests from patients so we can give them a shout out on the live show in the evenings. It's a really amazing way to kind of connect patients with the outside world. And it's got a lot of bad stigma because it's like quite, you know, badly funded, and generally the quality can be, you know, questionable at times. But during the pandemic, you know, when everything was locked down, a lot of the time, you know, people in hospital couldn't see their friends and family. So services like hospital radio became so valuable in just connecting people in the hospital with their loved ones outside the hospital. So it's such a great thing.
Is it more like a talk radio, or is it also music and stuff like that, or is it like a podcast?
It's radio, and it's most of the time it's 24/7, and it broadcasts a mix of everything. So every station has its own kind of identity, but generally it's, you know, a mix of music radio, talk radio. It's very much led by the volunteers that are there and the content that they want to produce, you know. And it's such a great cause, and there's a real kind of institution around it in the UK, and it's a really good springboard for people to get into radio as well. And that's really, I guess, kind of goes back to my story, because, you know, this little email that I sent to a lecturer thinking, oh, you know, like last ditch effort to kind of do something, you know, that triggered an introduction to the people at York Hospital Radio. And I was saying earlier how people, you know, have these big kind of epiphany moments, and I didn't think I did, but I guess I was partly lying there, because when I first walked into that radio studio, I did have that clarity. I did have that moment of, yeah, this is where I can shine, and this is where I can really be me and get the best out of myself. And that's where it all changed. You know, it was because of going into that local, you know, hospital radio studio that I kind of stayed at university. It's because of that that I then got work for the BBC a year or two later. It's because of that that I then, you know, started exploring audio production, and a few years down the line moved into podcasting, made the connections that I did, and had the career and the life that I have. And when I think about it, it all just started from that one little email that I sent from my bedroom at 11 o'clock at night after a couple of glasses of wine, thinking, what do I do?
Right. What's next? When you walked into that studio, did you feel like a sense of like home, like you belonged there? This was a space, or was it more the technical aspect, like you were excited to do the whatever they were doing?
I think it was definitely the environment. You know, it's hard to explain, and I don't think any of us can really put our finger on it, but when you sometimes just walk into a room, you enter just an environment, work or personal or otherwise, and you get it. You just know that you feel comfortable there, and there's something about it that just speaks to you. And for me, walking into a radio studio for the first time, that was that moment, and I suddenly knew that that's where my life was going to go somehow.
That's amazing. I mean, that's an epiphany moment. That's like, we go back to this butterfly effect, right? Of like, had you not looked up stuff at midnight, had you not sent that email when you were just feeling super desperate and like, I'm done, I don't belong here, this, I haven't found my space yet, you know, whatever that means, I don't know that I have either, but you know, like, it's, that's, had you not sent that email, had he not responded,
yeah,
like, what do you ever sit back and go, like, where would I be right now had this gentleman not responded to this email?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And we can, I mean, we can all just, you know, step back and just take a look at the lives that we have right now, you know, good or bad, and just kind of think the chances of everything in the universe playing out over the history of time so that every sequence of events happens in such a way that we are here right now doing what we're doing. I mean, that's like, that's mind-blowing to think of. And I don't think we step back and appreciate enough that sometimes we can get so fixated on these little problems and our sort of our first world problems of, you know, the supermarket doesn't have the right kind of pasta that I want for tea tonight, that we do lose sight of the big things like that.
And I think it's a lot harder to, in situations or in experiences like yours, it's a lot harder to find those moments to see like where each door opened for you and closed. Whereas someone like myself, you know, I experienced a great loss as a child, and that was like clearly my life was going to change from beginning to end. And that's how I thought. But then I talked to a friend of mine who lost his mother like around 12, and his experience was completely different. You know, and you're like, okay, it's what we do in these moments and how we look back on them and what we find grateful from those moments. And your story is very similar. I don't know if you listened to an episode with my friend Chantal, but she was having a bad experience in school and she was ready to drop out. And she told one of her instructors or one of her teachers, and he pulled her in and was like, you can't do this. Write 3 poems. We're going to submit that. And like, just that conversation, had he not been there that day, she probably would have dropped out of high school, you know? So I love that you're, I mean, really your life changed because of that email.
Yeah. And do you know what? Chantel's story really, I can relate to that so much. I loved that episode. And it just, I think, speaks volumes about how, you know, we can reduce these big moments in life to the idea that, you know, it's, you make of it what you choose to make of it. But sometimes we don't know what we're capable of making out of situations. And, you know, we need someone to take us aside and tell us that we've got this, or that we're better than we believe we are in that moment. And, you know, I can say that as a terrified teenager who honestly felt like I wasn't worth as much as the other people in school because they were getting better grades and they just seemed to get things more, you know, that they had better social skills. You know, I felt like that person who wasn't capable of the things that I wanted to do. And you just sometimes need someone to say, yeah, you are.
And here's what you should do. Go. You know, here, let me open this door to the studio for you. What did you do when you first started there at the studio?
I, like any of the volunteers, our first job was to go around the hospital wards in the evenings and collect requests, talk to patients. And I mean, that in itself was really humbling because, you know, you talk to people who, some of them have just, you know, broken a finger and others are, you know, in more vulnerable situations. And you hear a lot of stories when you're walking around a hospital when your only job is to talk to the patients. That really kind of brings you down to earth. And then I take the song requests back from the patients to the studio and we then find the songs. We had this big kind of a whole wall of vinyl records because it was all these, you know, donated records, you know, these EPs. And it's crazy. Like, people don't appreciate a good vinyl now, but we had this whole wall of like, and I don't know how much those records were worth, but we had like originals from, you know, Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and all these crazy, crazy records. But we, you know, at the time, I mean, we're talking 2006, 2007, you know, radio and podcasting and, you know, the whole audio industry wasn't like it is now. We can make this podcast from our homes now because we have the technology to do so. But back then, you know, even keeping a radio studio afloat, you know, we had a little computer, a couple of vinyl players, and we were like, we had to get the record out of the library, we had to queue it up, we had to press the button to start it. You know, everything's like digital and easy now. But, you know, running a radio station, even just a small one like that, was a huge task. And people did that and kept it going for 50 years before I even walked through the doors. And that's just amazing that people do that for free and spent their time just so they could provide a personal service to the patients that needed it. And then, you know, over time, they would train me up to do more, and I'd learn how to operate the radio desk. I'd do some sort of co-hosting duties as and when I needed to. And then eventually I had my own show, which was a disaster because I'm a terrible presenter, but I really enjoyed being there.
Well, and that's nice too. Like, something small like that gives someone like you the opportunity to learn all these ins and outs. Whereas had you got like an internship of some sort or apprenticeship at a big studio, you might have only been the person that, you know, takes out the trash or whatever that, you know, like just yes. A tiny little job. But it's like a startup, almost a startup environment of like, everyone jump in, it's time to help.
Exactly. And, you know, I just a couple of years, you know, after that point, I got a 2-week work experience placement at a huge, you know, a radio production company in London. And it was unpaid, obviously. But I went there and I was basically just running errands for 2 weeks. You know, I didn't really learn how to do anything. I was just making tea. I was keeping, you know, guests happy. I was running around London delivering flowers to people.
Right. You weren't doing anything in audio.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think really for me, you know, the lesson that I got from that, and I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to go into hospital radio, because it really taught me that no opportunity is too small. And sometimes it's those small things that seem not worth our time, or just, you know, there'll be no value in that, and it'll just, you know, that'll be boring or pointless or whatever. They're the things where we can find the most value, and often, you know, it is better to be a big fish in a small pond, because you can make more of a difference, and you can, you know, you have more of a chance to do all of those things that you think you're going to get the chance to do at these huge companies. And, you know, I think often we rush, we want to complete our career and all our life goals so quickly that we forget to just take those little steps.
And those little steps are the ones that make that success later on so much more valuable, right? Because we've experienced all these things along the way. And I was also thinking, when you were telling the story about like kind of your first task of going to the hospital and talking to the patients, that was probably a learning experience in itself as well, right? Because you were such, you know, were you, you know, as an introvert, like now you have to go to these strangers that are in vulnerable positions, right? And show compassion and empathy and talk to them about, you know, whether they're going to tell their story to you or not. You can't really predict that, I'm sure, right? Some of them don't want to share and some of them might want to. But did you learn a lot from just that experience? Did that change you?
Absolutely. And yeah, just being face to face with people, you know, you can't just walk into a hospital, stand in front of a patient and just not say anything. I mean, they're like, okay, who is this guy? He's not wearing scrubs. I don't know what to make of this. And so you know, you've got to say something, you've got to start a conversation, and that's on you as the person approaching. So yeah, it teaches you a lot of skills. And I guess it's much the same for anyone that does any sort of live broadcasting as well. As you know, the following few years taught me is that, you know, when the mic's on and people are expecting you to say something, you know, no one's going to save you. So it's on you. You've got to fill that time. You've got to start that conversation and say something. So yeah, it's a steep learning curve.
Well, it's a nice, but in the sense that you're in this almost safe space, because as you describe this hospital radio, it's, you know, underfunded and volunteer based. And so, like, if you're going to make mistakes, I mean, it feels like that's the place that you're allowed to kind of find your way without huge consequences, not to diminish anything that you guys were doing, but it's kind of more of a safe space. Had you gone directly to BBC,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely,
there'd probably be a different experience, right? How did you get to like kind of where you are now in the in what you're doing, and share a little bit about, I know you just launched something big in your world, so I'd love to hear more about that, because selfishly I'm super obsessed with the podcasting space.
Yeah, and it was a long and definitely not straight road to get from my hospital radio days to where I am now. And you know, a lot of it involved, you know, working back in finance. I left university. I graduated in 2009. And, you know, you're coming out of university, 21 years old. The global financial crisis has just like destroyed everything. You know, there were no jobs. There was no opportunities. And suddenly this idea that we could go to uni, get our degree, come out and just have the career of our dreams, it didn't happen. And, you know, I'm not alone there. There's thousands of people that were in the same boat, and it was tough. It was a harsh reality check that life doesn't work out the way you expect it to. So, you know, I did a bit of traveling. I did a master's degree. I went back to university to do that and did a few jobs along the way. I worked in marketing. I worked in retail. I spent literally 2 hours working in a call center. And then thought, nope, that's definitely not for me.
Smart choice.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of twists and turns, and but I always knew that I wanted to be doing something in the media, ideally in radio at the time. But it was tough. The jobs weren't there, the money wasn't there. And it's hard to get your foot back in the door. But I guess I can never regret that journey that I went on, and all those, you know, odd jobs and those, you know, sort of maybe choices that I sometimes regret a little bit and think, you know, has sort of delayed my career progression. Because, you know, again, you know, going back to these innocuous moments, it was moving back from university. It was going back home. It was, you know, helping my dad on a boring Wednesday to take up the tiles from one of our rooms so we could refloor. And deciding after 3 hours that we were going to have a break because we were both bored and we like coffee. So we went to the local coffee shop, and that's where I met my wife. So, you know, it's had I got a job at the BBC straight from university, I would have stayed in York. I might never have met my wife and had the family that I have now. So, you know, life has a habit of just throwing you a curveball, and you don't know that it's actually going to work out for the best.
Do you think that, I mean, I know you say like you don't regret any of those. Do you think those moments were just helping to confirm what you actually wanted to do, like going through finance and marketing and all the things that just were just a paycheck to you probably, right? And reconfirming, like, I got to find that feeling that I had at the hospital radio again.
I think we all wish that we can just fall into our dream job and, you know, be happily ever after straight away. But for most of us, that doesn't happen. And I don't regret that. And I don't think anyone else should regret that. You know, we're going to do some things that we don't particularly want to do. We're going to have some bumps along the road. But you're right, it's character forming. And it gives us the reassurance that end goal is worth it. And, you know, had I not had those challenges along the way, maybe I wouldn't appreciate doing the job that I do.
Yeah. So what are you doing now?
So now I'm a full-time podcast.
You like that? Yeah,
loved it. You were natural. Yeah, so now I'm a podcast producer, an audio director at The Podcast Boutique. Must get that little plug in there for my CEO, Lindsay. She'll appreciate that. So we've just launched a new podcast network as well called Emmeline, which is specifically aimed to represent female and non-binary podcasters, which has sort of come at a really good time, you know, in the industry. You know, We recognized this about a year ago anyway, because a lot of the clients that we have at the Podcast Boutique are women. They're generally entrepreneurs or, you know, business owners. And we kind of realized that there was this big gap in, you know, the podcast charts specifically for female podcasters. You know, you see them a lot as co-hosts, you know, or, and you particularly see women podcasters in the kids and family section, right? You know, every other genre, science, there's like no women. Sport, there's no women. Kids and family, all women. So there's this real kind of gendered sort of divide in the industry. And I don't think that that's intentional. I don't think any of us, you know, meant for that to happen. But I think it really highlights how we as listeners probably have this, still have a very ingrained bias towards the people we trust about certain subjects. And we really wanted to try and do something about that and sort of level out that gender gap in the industry, which is why we launched Emmaline. And there's a lot of other companies out there that are doing similar things. And I think, you know, credit to the podcast industry as a whole. You know, I think it's a massively supportive and collaborative industry. And I think we're all still kind of, we're going through this journey in an industry that's had a spotlight sort of put on it when we're still very much in our infancy. We're still working out kind of the sort of the nooks and crannies and sort of all the minutiae of how the podcast industry is actually going to work. And we're still in this massive process of sort of innovation. So I think one of the natural issues we have in podcasting, which we're now trying to address, is that of, you know, fair representation and diversity in the industry. And that's something that I think affects every industry, but is one that podcasting is particularly keen to address. And I guess we're doing our little bit with Emmaline in providing a network and a space for female and non-binary podcasters to collaborate and support each other. And we're particularly keen to find podcasters in those genres like science and sport and business and tech, where women are underrepresented, so that we can help them grow and monetize. And that's something that, you know, other networks are not really doing at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great thing to elevate those voices that are not represented. I mean, you look at this podcast, the podcast industry, super collaborative. It's just also really interesting because there's not enough that I don't know enough about it, but it's just like, you know, you can go to 50 different places to listen to the same podcast and like only the super popular ones are the ones that get, you know, the monetization in some capacity that will allow you to pay a bill. And, but I love what you're doing. And what you said was interesting to me that I've never drawn these dots in my life before. So you said, you know, kind of we're drawn to the voices that we trust, right? And so in certain areas, you know, my mom died when I was 8. And I remember distinctly in my teens, my dad came to me and he was like, "Why do you only listen to music by women artists?" And I never really thought about the connection to my mom passing and like why most of the podcasts that I listen to are women led, like all the true crime that I listen to, all women run, you know, hosted, produced, those kind of things. I guess I'm just drawn to that. And I think the connection is the loss of my mom and kind of finding that voice or that comfort. So it's really interesting. And I like that, you know, you're creating a space where these people that are, you know, where people can find these trusted voices a lot easier than kind of lost in the mix, right? You know, because these podcasts exist, but by you creating this network and pulling them together and helping them grow, then they're at equal playing field. So that was interesting to me to think about that.
Yeah. And I, you know, that's precisely why we're doing it. You know, there's a lot of female podcasters out there with some amazing, amazing content. And I still think there's a gap. You know, I think the recent study by Sounds Profitable, which anyone who works in podcasting, I'm sure has heard of. So they did a report earlier in 2022 that identified that only 29% of podcasters identify as female, only 2% as non-binary, which means 69% of podcasters identify as male. Obviously, that's disproportionate. It should be 50-50. And I think one of the problems is representation. You know, opportunity as well, definitely. But podcasting is so accessible now for people to do that I think it really comes down to support and representation, you know, helping those people who are new to podcasting to develop content that works and to give them the support and the tools they need to grow their show and get it found. Because, you know, discoverability is a buzzword in the industry at the moment, and rightly so. You know, we're at this point where, you know, there's millions of podcasts. So the question isn't, can I podcast? It's how can I get heard? And this is where we're seeing this disparity in the industry where, you know, typically the male podcasters are more established. They have existing audiences and fan bases. So, you know, they get picked up by the bigger networks. They get that support that the smaller podcasters, generally women and other non-male, non-white groups, don't have.
And now you're creating this space. And you just recently launched us towards the end of 2022, right? September?
Yes, we launched officially in September.
You know, and it's interesting because you've now created this network where you're helping underrepresented people that have amazing content, probably amazing shows, to be seen and heard. And it all, if we look back, it all stems to, you know, sending an email late at night. It all centers around like late at night, it seems, that like you're late at night looking for your university position spot, and then late at night sending that email out. Had you not done those things, had you fallen asleep a little early or had an extra glass of wine, you know, like you wouldn't, this life has taken you to help these underrepresented people. Like, it's crazy making those connections.
I mean, it's mad, yeah. And, you know, we can think, what if? And yeah, you're right. Like, if I just went to bed a bit earlier that night, none of this would have happened. And I'm also very conscious, you know, obviously we're talking about Emmeline. You know, I'm incredibly grateful for the position I'm now in life, for doing a job that I really love, and for having the opportunity to pass that on and help others get their chance in the industry. But I'm also very conscious that, you know, I'm a straight white male, and, you know, I certainly, there is an element of privilege in that, you know, and I'm conscious that I've worked very hard, and I'm very proud that I've worked very hard to get where I am. But there's a lot of other people in this world who have to work a lot harder than I've had to just to even get an equal footing. And, you know, that's something that I think we can all address, and we should all be working to change that. And that's something I think really informs the work I do now.
Well, you're doing good things, and I love that you wanted to be more vulnerable and share your story. I think what's great about it is there are so many people that are searching, or they don't feel like they belong in a certain space. They still haven't found what excites them. And what I get from your story is like, just do the little things, do the next best thing, that the next thing that interests you. Some of the things are not going to serve you in the way that you want them to, but they are part of your journey, and they're going to help you in some capacity. So I think it's great, and it's inspiring that you are where you are, because where you started the story and talking about, you know, how you wouldn't even get on the school bus. So going back to that, I like to end the episodes with like a question. So I'd love to think about, if you could talk to Liam that, you know, was skipping school because he was just so not ready to go to school, what could you say to him now with all the journey that you've been on?
You know, I think the one piece of advice that I would have given to that younger me would be that nobody else cares as much about me as I care about me. You know, so I can be anxious about getting on that school bus, but, you know, why was I scared? There's no need to be scared. You know, I'm the only person who thinks that everyone's looking at me when I get on that bus. Everyone else is equally as self-interested as I am, you know. So if I'm scared, other people are going to be scared of other things, maybe not of getting on the bus, but they're going to have their own concerns. They're going to have their own problems. You know, so I think it's so easy to get lost in your own kind of, lack of self-worth sometimes, and your own lack of self-confidence, and on all these issues that are going on in your head, that you lose sight of the big picture sometimes. And I think also more succinctly, I would tell younger me to just say yes, you know, get on the bus, just say, yeah, I'm going to do it, and get on the bus, say, yeah, I'm going to talk to this person. You know, it's those moments which I wasn't consciously thinking of, where I was like, yeah, I'll just send this email. Yeah, I'll just book a flight. Yeah, I'll just go get a coffee. You know, that's when, you know, I found the career I loved. That's when, you know, I went on, you know, a life-changing experience. That's when I met my wife. You know, it's all of these moments that it's when you don't think and you don't over-process that life tends to take you in the craziest and most amazing direction.
I mean, I don't know how to end the podcast after you saying that. I think it's so profound and something that we all could do a better job at. And I think sometimes we just get way too caught up in our head and worried about what other people are saying when, like you point out, they probably don't, aren't even thinking about you, you know, and you getting on the bus. So
yeah,
thank you for being a part of the Life Shift podcast and for being a listener. That's super awesome. I love that you recognize some of the stories. So thank you for fulfilling my journey. And like I said before, I've never done anything that's brought me so much joy. So I understand your story and finding that spot. So thank you for being a part of it.
Thank you, Matt. And it's a pleasure being on the podcast. I don't consider myself a presenter, so I'm sure I've dragged the caliber of your show down, but I would encourage everyone to listen to every other episode. It's a wonderful show.
I appreciate that. And if you are enjoying the podcast, I would love a rating and review from anyone listening. Apple Podcasts, that's the best place to write a review. I don't know if it means anything, but it sure boosts my day when I get one. So thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.